Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Welcome, thank you for coming. I don't blame you for sitting so far away, although I didn't eat very much garlic. It's okay. Is there anything in particular before we... Oh, for goodness sake, really? Where is he? What a guy. Tibetan font.
Oh.
Ooh, I gotta go now. I'm so glad you were interested, and now I'm leaving. Heart addiction's wonderful. Is there anything in particular you would like to discuss? Is tonight question night or is that tomorrow night? Who was it that told me? Oh, the
book. Both.
Anything in particular? Yes.
I would like to ask you to talk about will and it's what it is and it's how to use it appropriately in the path.
And it's such a confusing thing because when we say will, we all have a very clear idea of what we mean, don't we? It's a certain kind of unmovingness within our own being. Would that be true?
Often.
Something that we can set and we know it will stay there. Mm-hmm. But from a Buddhist point of view, that would not... You know, that's not the same thing. There is something called adetana, which is not called will, it's called determination. It's a determination, and there's a different quality to that, isn't there? Mm-hmm. And I don't think you can really work with determination until you understand... understand why there is a like of some things and a dislike of others, why there is trust and mistrust, why there is hope and fear. Because a lot of the time we get that feeling of being set just here, and I'm not going over this line, because of hope and fear, like and dislike. Because we don't want to go there, we don't know what will happen, it's too frightening. That means insanity. That means lack of control. Does that make sense to you?
I'm thinking of responsibility too.
Well, responsibility is something totally different. How are you thinking about responsibility?
I was thinking of the use of will in doing something for which you have responsibility.
I'm still, you know, I've sort of got a taste of something there, but it went flashing by so fast. Would you mind being so kind as to say more for me?
Okay, I'll try.
Or give me an example or something.
Say there is something that you need to do, but you don't necessarily want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way I'm looking at it, you use will to do it.
Either that, or you begin to question what is like and dislike. Mm-hmm. You take it as an exploration, or you take it as a good job for the army. Right? If you take it as a good job for the army, then somewhere shortly down the line, within weeks, if not days, another job for the army is going to arise. And then you will either do that one or not do that, and then somewhere down the line, another job for the army will arise. And then you'll either do that one or not do that one, and then most of the time do it, because that's why you employ the army. When the army comes complete with a jail and, you know, a court that does, you know, trials, and right? And it takes a lot of activity, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Is this what you're talking about? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that is basically one of those things that I call the hamster in the cage. It's a repetitive pattern that one falls into, and one is blind in it. One cannot see how one got into it. One only knows that, again, I've got to bring my will to bear. Is that what you mean by will?
Yes, and the reason I was asking is that doesn't feel... It does feel like a prison, except that...
It is a prison. It is a prison. It's called samsara. In Buddhism, it's called samsara, blind wandering. And there is no end to it, which is why I'm saying it will arise again, and it will arise again, and it will arise again. Prisons were modeled after monasteries. They're really good places to practice contemplation. Did you know that?
No.
That's true. That's where the first prisons were modeled from. Cells. Franciscan, I believe. Does anyone know? I believe it could have been Jesuit, but that's where the idea for prisons came from. Before that, you used to just chain them outside the city, or stone them, or drive them into the wilderness, or kill the buggers, you know? And then we thought they could atone. Come to at-one-ment. So you made basically a monastery. The only difference was that most of the people who joined the monastery of prisons weren't willing. They didn't feel a calling. They felt a push. Hi, my dear. It's interesting, isn't it? So it is a prison, but a prison is a monastery. So, you know, that's why you get that very beautiful teaching, samsara and nirvana are one. Now that is so theoretical if you keep saying, yeah, but what about this problem? I don't have the time to consider how anything about nirvana or samsara, because I have these horrendous duties, right? Does that make sense to you? Am I speaking to you, I hope, my dear friend? So then, eventually, however, one of two things will happen due to the extremely compassionate nature of the universe. You'll get exhausted, you'll get sick. It's really good, isn't it, Terry? Getting sick is brilliant, isn't it? Because what can you do?
Nothing.
And is the problem still there? And you can't blame them, and you can't, like, you know, you can't get away from it, you can't distract yourself, and you can't run on the cage. Because you're sick. You're like, oh, fuck, it's there again. Oh, fuck, it's there again. Until eventually you even get bored with that, and then you start being interested in it. And then the prison has become a monastery. When you turn around and look at your problem, the prison becomes a monastery. If you're trying to do the right thing and doing the discipline and caught in adversary and in the struggle, you're still divided against yourself. There is still one part of yourself that knows who I am because it knows who I am not. Right? It's preference, it's caught in duality, and it's not love. The only way those damn prison doors open is through love. Just go in, the warden, open all the prison doors and invite everybody out and have a feast. The only way is if you decide not to be in prison. If you look at the circumstances and say, okay, this is my choice, my choice, my choice to look at this. Because I don't see how all of this is occurring, but it has occurred before and it probably will occur again. And there is something extremely familiar about it. So what is it? What is present? Doesn't matter what it is. If you find that people are always negative toward you, or you're always short of time, or we all have a pet one, don't we? Come on. This is sort of a grudging honesty going on in this room. Don't we all have our pet little way that we're overburdened? It's a great way. Or caught, or in prison. Maybe the house requires a lot of cleaning, you know, whatever it is, you know? Our perpetual mess. Whatever it is. And you clean it up every once in a while, but it's only a matter of time. Isn't it true? How does it arise? You don't really know. Do you? Do you really know? You don't really know. And that is the first key. Then who is I?
Well, I am the one who wants to. I'm the warden.
And what does I not want?
Well, I don't want to. Dungeon, 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 dungeon.
Right? So you keep doing that, and then pretty soon there's most of your creativity is in the dungeon. And then it's hard to think because the sound of the dungeon. Everybody having a party down there. So then you have to do a great act of will. I know I'm oversimplifying it and doing all that, but there is something that I'm saying here that's very true. That if you identify yourself as I who should do this, rather than I choose to watch myself trying to do this and choose to want to see when I like it and when I don't like it and what my reactions are, just because it would be interesting to know who is actually home rather than assuming an authority. Because assuming an authority is not fun. It's not a good time. Is it? Why shouldn't you have a good time? It's your life. Isn't that true? You can have grief, pain, discomfort, and be present in it, and in a kind of a way, not dislike it. Open your heart from it. Become more able. I have a dear friend who's a beautiful teacher, who got boils on his arse. He's a big-time meditator. You know, sits for hours. He couldn't sit. He told me he learned more from meditation from that than from all the retreats he did. Now, isn't that interesting? Because on all the retreats, he learned how to see what is present. Then when something that became present that totally took away his main joy in life, he focused on it and just was present with it. He wasn't arguing with it. He was not in an adversarial position. If you're trying to do something with will, who are you playing to? Who do you have to be good for? Why do you have to earn your reward? Why does the struggle have to be so heroic? What is your myth? I remember one time Rinpoche in Toronto, Namjong Rinpoche, my beloved teacher Namjong Rinpoche, in Toronto was addressing what we used to have these conferences. We had seven of them, I think. Wasn't it seven? I think seven conferences in Toronto. They were great. They were great fun. Anyway, one of them, he was the keynote speaker, and at the end of it, he looked at everybody. It was like, you know, 200-300 people from Trauma, Ontario, sitting there in this gorgeous setting. And he said, imagine that you're awakened. Isn't that beautiful? Don't imagine that you're in prison. Imagine that you are the Buddha doing what you're doing. Because you are, and you have the total power to do enlightened activity with every aspect that comes up, not adversarial activity. If you give yourself, you know, write yourself a note. Mm. Dear Idreya, you are the Buddha. Thank you, Idreya. You know? And you can feel how that would shift it. Can you feel?
I've tried. It's very difficult for me. I've tried. I will. Yes.
You can feel that it is adversarial.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. And so, and that it is a closed system.
Yeah, it feels that way.
And so, therefore, it's a pattern that somehow or other in your life, nothing arises without cause. There was a time when it did get you something. But whatever that time was is no longer present, so whatever it was that it used to get you is no longer in your environment, but you're still doing the pattern. So there are a lot of different ways you can approach it. The number one way is to consider that it's your choice to do exactly what you're doing. And every bit of it, both the part that doesn't want to do, enjoy the resistance, and then the part that does want to do, enjoy the doing. Maybe you're going to do it in fits and starts. Oh, I really don't want to do this. Okay, what do I want to do? I want to go, okay, I'm going to let myself go over and look out the window and smile at the birds. Okay, now I really should do that. Okay, now I'm going back and I'm going to do it. Do two pages? Oh, I really don't want to do it. Okay, go make a cup of tea. I do want to, you know? You understand that?
Yes, it's kind of what I do, but without much awareness.
Yeah, I know. It is exactly what you do. Mm-hmm. And so imagine that you're doing that, and you're doing it all by choice. Mm-hmm. Choose to do what you are doing. Mm-hmm. Don't make yourself an enemy of yourself. Really, from a Buddhist point of view, the whole concept of power, which is as close to will as we'll get, the Western idea of will, comes from acting appropriately. Acting appropriately means you see things for what they are and you don't try to change them. Or what was his name, the man who did the geodesic domes? Buckminster Fuller so beautifully said that when his daughter died, he was devastated. He didn't see any reason. If that was, you know, like that, it was devastating to him. He locked himself into a hotel room, and after the third day, he thought he would kill himself. And he had this dream. And he dreamt that the Queen Mary, the big old ocean liner, remember the Queen Mary, was crossing the Atlantic Ocean. That was the first stage of the dream. Next phase of the dream, he's swimming to the prow of the Queen Mary and pushing against it. And it ain't turning. Then the next part of the dream, he lets go at the prow and drifts back to the stern. And the last frame of the dream, he's holding on to the stern and angling his body like a rudder. And the Queen Mary turns. It's your dream. Life is your dream. Are you enjoying pushing against an unmovable force? Or, you know, would you like to use the force of it and do a little tacking? Right? And have a good time. Decide you're enjoying it. Every once in a while, just say to yourself, gee, I'm glad I can do this. In the beginning, it will be a made-up thing. But very quickly, it will be. Because you do enjoy it. You enjoy both the resistance, which gives you a place to get away from the form and allow new creative energy to come in. And the form, which gives you the basic foundation that has the power to support the creativity. You need both the form and the formless. What you call a resistance, I would call a creativity. That which is not fitting in. That which will find the new boundary. Does that make sense to you? So the resistance is a nice time to go wool gathering, and then the creativity, the work is a good time to spin the wool. See what colors you got. They both work. They work together very well. It's the idea of how it should be that is in the way. And that's imported, not from you. That's from somewhere else. You've lifted that, and you're loyal to it, and you don't need to be. Because the suffering of the state is in that idea. Not in what you're actually going to do or not do, is it? I mean, every time you do, don't you? So you could just do it without the drama.
Without the
drama.
The drama.
Dharma, not drama.
You can have a good time. Is that useful?
Yes.
Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? How's your rosary?
Oh, I didn't bring it with me.
Did you use it?
Well, I looked at it. I went through it, but I didn't do any mantras or anything.
You didn't do one rosary?
I hand felt it right through.
Okay. So tonight
but
do
that
one.
That counts.
Yeah, it does. It counts. Now add your voice. Tonight do one rosary of Ching Raisi. Okay? Is this a deal?
What about Sunday, though?
No, tomorrow's Saturday, so you're just like getting some grease in it so it's ready to go.
Okay.
Just grease it up so it's ready to roll. You need to, you know, warm it up.
Okay.
Before Sunday. Is that a deal?
Okay.
Thank you.
A lot of willpower. Sorry.
What happened to that Otto who used to come here, who was afraid to speak at all? Where'd he go? Slipped in this clone here. He's got his little...
A lot of pain fumes, maybe.
You think that's what it is? Okay, you gotta get an air purifier for him to wear right under his nose.
Like a fish, eh?
No questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Yes, sir. Nothing?
Well, I was explaining away something. I'm having an interesting time with the Tibetan, a new book called the Tibetan Yoga of Dreams and Sleep. And it's the same material, but it's done by the bomb with a slightly different emphasis. And it has a procedure whereby during the day you catch yourself when you're feeling aversion for a thought, thoughts are going through, and you feel repelled by one or you grab at one. And you just take, you allow it to come up, and when it's aversion, you just mark it. Oh, I hate that thought. It's a nasty, nasty feeling I got from that.
Uh-huh.
Or yet another one comes up and it's great, it's light sunshine. Everything's, birds are flying, let's go. And then you stop and then you go into presence of mind and just be right where you are for a minute. And say, I'm awake in a dream. What happened in your dream last night? Did you actually find anything behind that door? This is an old story, you're grabbing it and letting go, or this is just a dream. So I let it, everything go through. And then spaces opened up and I began to move into childhood. And some things that had never occurred to me, being in a crib looking through the bars, actually wakened up with the most beautiful spread of candies and cookies and cakes. And I looked up between the bars, where are they all? What happened? What am I doing in this place? What am I back here for? And I traced through a whole bunch of things in childhood. And then I came to an awareness, this is going on all week, and I came to a realization, I've been shaped by thousands of hands.
Okay.
And I had nothing really essentially to do with it. I went along with it, but what did I know?
Okay.
But now, I have the responsibility to shape myself by looking at what's happening and giving a little pause. But don't hold myself responsible for all the cries of past lifetimes. Let them come up and release themselves.
That's right.
But take what I've got.
That's exactly right.
And be responsible for it and see what happens. But I don't care if I murdered anybody 29 years ago, but I've got to see it if it comes up.
That's right. That's right, Morris. That's beautiful. But that's Dharma.
That's so beautiful. I might as well enjoy being alive.
Have a good time.
And do it now.
And watch the seeds of karma ripen.
Yeah.
And it is a dream.
Yeah.
Samsara is a dream. The hamster on the wheel is a dream. It's just the same dream over and over,
same
and
dream.
It hasn't changed. It
keeps popping up.
And you keep doing it, you know, and then you start looking into the like and dislike is the key. Like and dislike is the key. Whether you do it through Bon, whether you do it through Theravadin, insight practice, it doesn't matter what you do. If you really start to watch, oh, what is like, what is dislike? You know, and is it mental like and dislike, or is it physical like and dislike? Mm-hmm. Can I change it? Mm. If I change it, does reality change already? You know it's a dream. Already, you know it's a dream.
Yeah.
If I can change like and dislike, change it to just being interested in like and being interested in dislike, rather than being run by them, then you already know it's a dream. You already have seen that. You already have seen that. That you're continuously making sure you stay asleep every time you enter that field, that ping pong ball, that hamster cage wheel. That's right. That is exactly it. Which is why when you take refuge, you start with the sense of all the beings who have had anything to do with you. You start with your parents. And then you do all the mandalas of all of the beings that you're a part of and that you have been a part of, their mandala, all of the hands that have shaped you. You put them all behind you and you look dead ahead and you say, I, with all of these hands shaping me, I have been shaped to go for refuge. Refuge from being shaped. Refuge from being subject to the conditions of the past. Refuge to being blind in the dream. That's exactly right. That's what refuge is for. That's why you put all your mothers and fathers, and why there is no separation between any of us. Because we are all players in each other's psyche. We are shaping and shaped by each other every moment, even those whom you have never met. It is an ongoing, continuous shaping. Everything you are is from billions of moments, not just the one or two that were the straw that made you decide not to play, or to play, or whatever. Or to play in a certain way, or whatever. Look at all the moments. You know, we fixate on a few and then we keep telling that story. But look at all the little moments of like and dislike. Look at all of the billions of things that feed and nurture and shape. And what did the Buddha say? He said, I have found you, O
Builder. You shall build no more.
You shall build no more. That's what he said.
You don't go charging through the door.
That's what he said. That's what he said. He didn't say, aha, I have built myself into something other. It's not going to work. No matter how you hold your mouth. Will? But interest, acknowledgement that we are shaped by billions of moments, there is no separation. There is no separation. Who have I not abused? Who has not abused me? Who have I not loved? Who has not loved me? Doesn't matter who I murdered 29 years ago. Right. It is just a continuous, ongoing, unending. There is no beginning to samsara. There is no point where you say, well, this is where it started. All you can say is, oh, this is where I decided that this was a good wheel to get on. And I think I'll change my mind now. But the beginning of samsara, no beginning. From the very no beginning. So you take refuge by starting that this lifetime. These are the patterns that really make me understand how much I don't like to be shaped by neurosis. Here's my mommy. Here's my daddy. Here's my sisters and my brother. And here's my aunts and uncles and cousins and my neighbors and my first grade school teacher. And here's my first boyfriend. And here's my second, right? Here's my first acid trip. All of it. You put it all there. Here's my first teacher. You just put it all there, and it just suddenly becomes, here's my first planet. Here's my first bear. Here is all of the interconnections that I am not separate from. And for all of samsara, refuge. I seek refuge. Refuge from what? From the blind, continuous being subject to the repetitive patterns that have no end. Except to wake up. Just consider your adolescence. Are you interested in doing it again? Some of you are saying.
Selected parts.
Would that it could be done, you know? Exactly. But it is done again and again and again. Form changes slightly, name changes slightly, memories change slightly, causation changes slightly. The self changes. But not the wheels, not the impulse, not the blindness, not the ongoing push of desire. Maybe if I hold my mouth this way. It's all a dream.
The funny little thing in there too is moving around is identity, right? My sense of my somewhat sense of being in the womb, and then the energy switches over. And I'm feeling the mother's somewhat feeling my mother's discomfort as I kick. There's a sense of, well, I'm a mother.
Yeah, and it's really true. That's one of the ways you can tell when you're getting memories from the womb is because it's you can't separate, between child and mother because it's like...
First, I have a real strong feeling of being a mother.
Yeah, well, there's no separation.
No separation.
There's no separation in the energy field, in the emotions.
No.
There's one emotion.
There's like going back and forth between...
That's where we learn all our emotions, yeah.
This is grief. This is grief.
We get the basic program, the energy pattern.
The
We've got them already. That isn't entirely true. But basically, yeah, there's no separation.
The blame slips away because you can't blame yourself.
Yeah. And you can't when you see the billions of hands either, Morris. The billions, that's why they do that with the refuge tree. You put all those beings behind you. Because it's true. Because it's like one unending chain. You can't say, oh, this is me and this is someone else.
You're taking refuge in a concept. Or a realization.
No, you're not.
You're taking refuge in the realization of all those
You're
things.
Taking refuge from, in the beginning, I don't want to be in this dream. You're not taking refuge in a concept because that idea of not wanting to be in the dream couldn't come up unless some part of your being is not in the dream.
Well, it happens, but...
There has to be a knowing of refuge before you can name it. somewhere deeply, dimly.
I always talked out of it. The refuge just sounds like hiding in church basement.
I know you have. Mm. I never thought I'd hear you say that, though.
I never use it.
I'm sitting here going, oh, goody.
I don't... The idea of refuge is turning your back on the whole business.
You shuffle off to Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, refuge sounds like hiding out.
No, it isn't hiding out. It's refusing to hide in samsara.
It's just terminology here. The words.
Well, okay. For you, because you dislike it, we'll change that. Yeah. We'll take it out of the English language altogether. Is that good?
Yeah.
Are you hearing me?
Yeah.
I'm talking about the dream.
Talking about the dream.
The dream of disliking that word refuge. Well, okay, this is your dream, so if you dislike it, we'll completely delete it from the English language and from all living there.
All right, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so why am I just like,
Don't be so impressed.
It's a stickler for me.
You are impressed. You want to be impressed with that. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Have your very own hamster wheel. Have a good time.
Just
we'll throw you peanuts.
No one here is allowed to say the word refuge.
Okay, refuge.
You thought it. I saw you think it.
But I want to go on to something else. May I do that?
Okay. I see how it works.
The other thing that you notice when that very beautiful thing that you're talking about being shaped by so many hands, which is like so beautiful, that's exactly the experience, is you realize that you are also shaping so many lives. And you realize that that has been going on forever and there is no end to it. And that there is just for a moment, because you actually have the good fortune to see this ongoing blind dance of samsara. Acknowledge it's blind. Acknowledge it's ongoing. Acknowledge you're not alone in it. You have trouble acknowledging you're not alone, then you do what they call the Tonglen practice, right? You feel the feeling of being trapped. You become aware of who else in the neighborhood might be trapped. You imagine somebody you've seen two blocks away. You imagine maybe they feel trapped right now, or they have felt trapped. Exactly the same way they've been caught. You can feel, if you're really dedicated to your neurosis, you can feel a resistance to thinking about anybody else's trappedness, can't you?
Yes, but I'm really trapped.
You know, so you might have to take a few runs at this if you're really dedicated to being the world's worst, most pathetic, poorest, dearest, cheapest, hardest working, least recognized, most brave. What else? What else? Have I left anything out? Any other good words anybody's got?
Misunderstood.
Most misunderstood. Yes. Most rejected and abandoned for no. That's a good one too, isn't it? Most subject to the cruel blows of fate. That's good too. That's a good one. You know, we all have our favorite songs, don't we? Huh? We dance very well, don't we? Right. So when you begin to realize that that's what you're doing, then what you can do is you can start to focus on the fact that you're not the only one who is caught like that. And you start with the feeling you have, and you become aware there are many beings right now in this neighborhood who also feel this way. The difference between them and me is they don't know they're not alone. You're not isolated.
The dream is running in.
You're not isolated. Part of the desperation depends on your believing that you're isolated. That there is no many hands shaping you, that there is no companionship, there is no connection. Now I is not the biggest thing in the world anymore. Do you hear that? And so you start working with that. You feel, many beings feel exactly this way. And it is also true. You know it's true, don't you? And they're not aware that they're not alone in this. At least I know that. And you listen, or you smell, or you taste, or you touch. Somehow use one of your senses. I can feel this. Maybe they're not capable. I would wish them to feel, or see, or taste, or touch. I wish them this. For the, you know, for them to at least be have some perspective, right? Perspective. Because when you're on the hamster wheel, you have no perspective. I was talking about last night about 2 inches of bathwater, drowning in 2 inches of bathwater. And it is, isn't it? Or a hamster on a wheel. And it is, isn't it? Just run all night. But then as soon as you become aware that there are other beings, your perspective has totally shifted. And you realize how much love and care there is between all of us. You realize your love of friendship, your love of beauty. You realize others love you, others find you beautiful. You do realize that. You do let that in. And then you have motive to go for refuge. So first, you have the seeing that this is samsara with all the beings behind you. And then second, you have motive, because at least I know it's suffering and all these beings don't. I would like to bring this to them. I would like to give them the sound of liberation. I would like to give them the taste of at-one-ment. Right? Myself too, because we're not separate. You see, that part of really difficult part of being caught in a neurotic state is that you're isolated. Isn't it true? When you can actually reach out or talk to somebody about it, it's already changed. You're not swallowed by it. It is not your world. In fact, you're not even 18. As a matter of fact, you're definitely on your way up to the hill, if not on the way down. Right? You realize that you've spent a lot of time in this blindness without seeing. And you don't know how long you have. At any moment, like that, like, so quick. And every day of life is not your right, it's your gift. This is a gift, not something you deserve. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, walking, talking, loving, laughing, speaking, these are gifts, not rights. You're very rich. And like that, you could spend it all. The credit cards could come due. So you don't have a lot of time. You have to pay attention now. It helps to know how old you are, doesn't it? It's really helped you, hasn't it, to really stop sort of searching around, eh?
Well,
you told that to me.
It concentrates the mind on priorities.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have that. You've told me many times in the last year, I don't have a time for a lot of these things anymore. I really have to be prepared to die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It would be nice if we could all do that before we're in our 70s, 80s, and 90s, wouldn't it? Don't you think so? It would be nice if all of us could become aware with that sharpness of what is a priority earlier in our life.
We always tend to think, well, tomorrow.
Yeah, but it's no guarantees. No guarantees. And the other thing that's clear is that how you act, the result will follow. If you act with blindness, the result will be blindness. If you act with hope and fear, the result will be hope and fear. If you act with clarity, the result will be clarity. If you act with interest, the result will be interest. If you act with generosity, the result will be richness. If you act with miserliness, the result will be poverty, pinchedness, caught. If you don't act with generosity, with giving yourself the benefit of the doubt, poor you. It's also something very important to know. I'm reading opened a book on your bedside, Sogyal Rinpoche's Book of Days, and I just opened it up, and the page said that the teacher, the being who knows the truth of emptiness, is even more aware of the preciousness, the fineness, the vastness of emptiness, is even more aware of the fineness of cause and effect, and the need to pay attention to the detail of cause and effect, is as fine as a grain of flour. A flour is like powder. Because all of space is filled, this vast space consciousness is filled with the dancing radiant energy, otherwise known as cause and effect, seeds of karma ripening. It's just no one owns millions of shapings, billions, trillions, gazillions. So then, you see, if cause and effect were not true, there would be no liberation. If there were no cause and effect, you would not be able to wake up. You would not be able to say, oh, this is a dream. How do I go about waking up? Waking up is refuge. Because there is cause and effect. And because you are capable of working it for the sake of all beings, all the shapings of the whole history that holds you forward. If you're isolated, you have no power. But you're not isolated. None of us are isolated. It takes a lot of effort to keep those walls up. None of us are isolated. It doesn't exist. You're not separate from anything. That's my air. Give it back. According to the Buddha, there are four reasons why we keep getting caught in samsara. Would you like to hear those four reasons? First reason is considering the impermanent to be permanent, some sense of order, or some state of doing that we think should permanently be there, some sense of rightness that we permanently think should occur. Considering the painful to be pleasant. If I really work hard, then I'll get my reward. I have a dear friend who's been involved a lot with Dharma and who really loves teachers who yell and scream. It's funny she doesn't like me. I fit all the criteria. Oh well. Anyway. And when I say to her, why do you know, what is it that happens with that? And she says, oh, I learned so much. It's so good for me. And she doesn't mean that in a way of being off the hamster wheel. She means that if she's yelled at enough, then she's allowed to give herself, she gives herself permission to have an insight. I was married to a man who didn't believe that anything I said was something that was seriously something I was saying to him unless I yelped. We would have conversations and he'd go, And so I'd say, you know, by the way, we need to stop over at that store. We'd be driving from Toronto out to Stouffville or whatever. Because I need to get such and such. Okay, he'd say, drive right by. The store was right there, Jerry. Oh, yeah, right, okay. Drive right by.
Chair, right. Store, step, shop.
He didn't even know I was yelling. Because that was how you did things. When someone yelled, you did it. It's interesting, isn't it? Took me a while to catch up. We all have our little tricks, don't we? How we feel appreciated or not appreciated, are we? How we really want to be appreciated, but we don't leave any room for anyone to leave the roses. Are you always like that in this room? So we always have to work harder because nobody else is going to do it. That's conceiving the painful to be pleasant, isn't it? The selfless to be self. I will. Condition patterns. It's a dream. Like and dislike. Some sense of safety. a sense of safety, not actual safety. Condition pattern, a dream, like and dislike. As long as this is the same thing that I already survived, it must be okay, so I want it to repeat. Not a self, only familiar. Hard to break habits. Joyous to break habits. Delicious to fall in love, isn't it? Fall in love with the non-habitual. And the last one, considering the impure to be pure.
But isn't there something that you're supposed to see things in the highest view all the time too? No?
This is the Buddha speaking. He was not a Tibetan.
Oh.
And really, this is talking where, in a way, yeah, I mean, Bajra pride. And those things. They're very powerful, and we can actually talk about them a lot, but right now that's not what we're discussing. We're talking more about... I'm just typing up some notes on the elements and mandalas that were given by Nari Toku in 1967 or 1968 to a group of us. Beautiful teaching. I actually started typing it up. He talks about four yakshas on the mandala, four of these fierce deities. And the one on the bottom is, he's at the bottom base of the mandala, where the base sits. There's also an ocean. And this great yaksha is continuously repairing the base so it's not washed away by the ocean. That's his whole radiant energy job, right? Any of you involved in maintenance like that? I don't know. Anyway, that's his main radiant energy job. And then the next level up, the next yaksha, has this rosary, where he's...
I think I heard somebody...
And he's blissfully, you know, turning the beads and maintaining that, and he's basically guarding eternity, turning the beads of the rosary, because you use the rosary, you start the guru bead and you go around to the other side of the guru bead and then you turn it around and you go back the same way. So it's basically a infinity sign that you do. You don't cross the guru bead, right? So it's basically like the endless back and forth. So he's guarding infinity until the rosary breaks. That's what the next yaksha is doing. Does that sound familiar to anyone as a career choice? And the next yaksha is absolutely drunk. Just drunk. Bliss drunk. And he's considering the impure to be pure. He thinks he's got it. Is that a career choice for any of you? And the fourth yaksha is dancing as an offering because of the unending dance of cause and effect, although he knows there is no dancer. So that's the, to me, that's what the impure considering the impure to be pure is experiencing states of mind and thinking that they are worth keeping and that everything else has to be kept away from pride and, you know, dividing things into good and bad or having a sense that you have some great understanding. I remember one time many, many years ago in my early days of the teaching, this neighbor phoned me one night and said, you should congratulate me. And I said, yeah, okay, congratulations. What for? And he said, well, I've awakened. And I said, wow, that's great. Shouldn't you congratulate me? You don't get it. Because if you're awakened, then everybody should be awakened, right? But if you're awakened and you're waiting for everybody to congratulate you, maybe you haven't awakened. Especially after you get tired of waiting, you start phoning around the neighborhood. Soliciting it, you know, that could be making the impure pure. There's a slight chance there. Wouldn't you say? I mean, is that reasonable? Or unreasonable, whichever you want. So because of those four views, they say beings are subject to strong and rough suffering. Strong suffering is actually pain. Rough suffering is that quality of dissatisfactoriness where it's like a really bumpy road kind of thing. Without good shocks. And you've got a hangover. Although beings may act with kindness and practice goodness and be wholesome, so long as those views are there, the view is wrong. You're practicing kindness because you consider yourself to be pure. Do you understand? Or you can't practicing. You understand? You understand what I'm saying? The view is very important. Two things are important: view and emotional content. View and energy. The energy you're using is frustration. Change the energy. Approve. Watch and see if the view changes. Just as an experiment. And for most people, you know, there is not much chance that they will hear anything, that they will see how easy it is to change their view. Because they're so hypnotized by their conditioning. They're clinging so desperately, sure that it must be right. They don't pay attention to the repetition. They don't pay attention to the nearness of death. They don't pay attention that the things they thought would satisfy them didn't satisfy them. They don't pay attention to the fact that a lot of what they're doing is based on competition or duality. They don't pay attention to those moments where they're motivated not by duality and see what the difference is between when the mind is just present or when there is. Relationship. Me and you, sweetheart. Or there's just totality consciousness dancing. Radiant. So on that basis, then, you say, you know, as much as I am able, I wish to come to greater clearing and clarity and understanding, and especially for all the beings who have supported me, shaped me, held me. You're not alone. Some of your greatest enemies have been your kindest friends. You cannot cut yourself off from anyone. It's not salvation if you leave anyone out. Liberation is a party that you invite everyone. And therefore, having performed all of these acts with the awareness of the shaping, the billions of hands and moments and energies of shaped and shaping, ongoing, blind, no discrimination, driven by like and dislike, hope and fear, they're called eight worldly dharmas, which I won't get into tonight, driven by the eight worldly dharmas. One is continuously pushing into blindness, trying to relieve something because of being caught by those four views. Unable to see that we are not isolated, not aware that all beings have suffering and that one at least can see it. And making that great effort and deciding, yeah, I can see that we are caught and I wish to be free. And I wish to be free for the sake of all beings. That has the power to attain liberation. That's considered the state of mind that can actually take refuge, find refuge, become refuge. Questions, answers, comments? Complaints? Can I use any descriptions? Yes.
The third one, did you say considering the selfless to be self?
Yeah.
I have a hard time getting my mind around what that means.
Basically, being caught in duality. Feeling that there is a fixed object, a fixed self, subject. You would probably particularly refer to it in, because this is very, very much the Theravadin tradition. It would probably refer to the five aggregates. If one were to read it in the sutras. Does that make sense to you, or should I say more about that?
Well, I can't imagine how the self could know the selfless, or how the, it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't logically make sense. So
by considering the selfless to be self,
yeah.
It's not capital S. To consider that which is not inherently a self, to be inherently a self. That would be broken clearer. Does that make it easier?
It's not that one. It's both little s's. Would you mean doing a selfless act and you consider that to be...
No. It is more... There would be a whole discussion in Buddhism about whether a selfless act would be possible,
right.
Actually. It would be turned around the other way. But But no, it's more like considering that there is such a thing as an inherent self. Holding that as a belief system because of not seeing that there is no inherent self. It is a great insight to understand that we are shapings. That there is not a fixed self or soul that remains unchanged throughout all time and space. Thank you.
Well, I'll just have to turn over some more and think about it, see what it could mean. It's funny how, I mean, it just doesn't, I just can't.
How about to considering that which is not a self, to be a self? Does that make it easier?
But I don't know what it is. What, for me personally, as a self, I don't know what not self is. You know, it's like, I don't know what that is. So it's like I can't even think about it.
Yeah, so that's where I thought that the thing is. So are you a different self than you were yesterday?
Yes and no.
Yes and no. And are you a different self than you were 10 years ago?
Same answer.
Yeah. And on your deathbed, will you be the same self? Same answer. And you don't have to go beyond this life. There is something that is passed on, and there is something that is not the same. There is a continuum of some type.
Right.
We're not going to get into what.
Yeah.
But there is not a fixed, unchanging self. There's not a ball bearing that is passed on from your mother's womb to this point and will continue until you die. And they will just sit there. Huh?
There appears to be.
It feels like there is.
Yeah.
But when you actually, at every moment, when I am absolutely convinced that the Reform Party is the right thing to vote for, and you bloody well better vote for it, boy, God, there's a self, isn't there?
Yeah.
And that, and the, furthermore, the emotional, the felt sense of that self is that I have always known this, and I will always know this. You know, it extends in time. The sense of it is very powerful. There is not a conception of when that self did not exist. But then when you say to somebody, but you know, 2 years ago you were NDP. Or so you say to me, but since 2 years ago you were NDP. I go, oh, well. Right? And you can see the self go in good cases. Right? And then that self changes. But that is the nature of self. It's supposed to feel like it has always been. That's when it's working. Do you understand? And so the concept of it that I think for me made it clearer for me to understand this was like the ocean and a drop of spray. Totally not the ocean. Totally what it was flying through the air. And for this moment, it's a self, and then, and there's these ongoing little flips of separation where I am telling you this, or whatever. I'm using Reform Party NDP because it's nice and dramatic, but you get the feeling of it. And then in between, a total dissolution into the present moment's circumstances, which are the shapings that then fling out again another self who has really this and that sensitivity, and based on the continuum of experiences that has kept it moving. Does that make sense to you? Am I being clear so far?
Yeah.
So that is called non-self, non meaning non-inherent self. There is not a ball bearing. But in Buddhism, you never say there is absolutely no self. That is never the concept. There is continuum. There is cause and effect. And that's why you don't ignore cause and effect. That's why morality is always important. No morality, no compassion.
What's morality?
Treating things appropriately. It's power. Does that help a bit?
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating. It's fascinating.
It is. You bet your sweet Bibby. Done.
Is this statement correct? Recognizing all the beings that have shaped me, I go for refuge knowing that I'm not alone, and for the sake of all those beings, I do so?
Why don't you work with that and see what you learn? And then listen to the tape and then work with it again. Why don't you work with that? Why don't you find out for you what is refuge? And what is your motive for refuge? I don't think there's a more powerful question. You know? It's kind of like, okay, what am I going to be when I grow up? You know? What is refuge? I remember in about the second year after I met my beloved teacher, Namgyal Rinpoche, he forced us to learn Pali. Pali, my dear, who speaks Pali? It's a dead language. At least Tibetan is still a living language. Pali is a dead language. And it has, you know, words like German, like three locomotive trains together pulling down the track. I mean, the words just keep going. And then all those funny little accents. It was disgusting. And then he chanted like somebody who had learned how to chant in Burma and then had studied in Sri Lanka. Which just happens to be true. If you throw Thailand into it, you got it. And so we had to learn all these chants. And one of the chants we had to learn was Iti Piso Bhagava Arahang Sama Sambuddho Sama Sambuddho Vijacharana Sampano Sugato Loka Vijula Nutaro Purisa Dhammasara Tisata Deva Manusa Nambuddho Bhagava Ti. And then we had to learn Swagato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Hipasiko Panayiko Pachatam Veditabo Vinuriti, which is the Dharma. And then we had to learn Supatipano Bhagavato Savakasangho Jupatipano Bhagavato Savakasangho Nyayapatipano Bhagavato Savakasangho Samichipatipano Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Yadidam Chatari Purisa Yukani Atta Purisa Pugalai Sa Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Ahunayo Pahunayo Dakinayo Anjalikaranyo Anutaram Punyakatam Lokasa Ti. And he used to criticize us. Ask us to chant in front of him and then criticize us. Cecily, you just don't have that long A in the right place now, do you? We had to go at it and go at it and go at it. And then I started thinking, what does it mean? And I started reading, well, what does it mean? Iti piso, such indeed is Bhagavad, the Blessed One, Arahant. Arahant, what does Arahant mean? Arahant has five meanings. One of the five meanings is the inner and the outer are the same. No secrets. No little private dramas, just for you and you alone. Inner shaping, outer shaping. Inner universe, outer universe. Real megalomania. Breaking the bonds. Taking the snakes, that was good. Taking the snakes, the energies, and using them, freeing them, freeing the snakes. Five. Very beautiful. Sama Sambuddho, the complete and total state of discovery. That's what Buddhism, Buddha means, the discoverer. One of the meanings of Buddha means the discoverer, one who discovers, one who finds, one who opens into. Sama, discoverer of totality. So, like, you know, work it, see, it's a really interesting thing. What is refuge? And I remember one time, you know, doing this religiously because I was going to get it right, because I hated being criticized, you know. Hated it so much that before my beloved teacher Namgyal Rinpoche, if I thought someone didn't like me, I used to stick my thumb out and stop when I was 2,000 miles away. I never stayed in the same city. In fact, I never stayed in a city where more than 10 people knew my name for very long. So it was quite a thing, you know, to actually stand there amongst a whole bunch of people who knew my name. Oh, you got the A's to So I'm going to learn it, you know. But while I'm going over it and over it, I start saying, what does it mean? What does it mean? And what does refuge in the Buddha mean? And what is refuge? And what is Dharma? These are very worthwhile things to ask. You know what samsara is.
I don't.
Samsara means blind wandering, being subject to repetitive patterns.
Yeah. It's kind of shocking for me to look into the Pali at one time, in the so-called dead language. I find the word gachari, which is a space vehicle, in which comes chariot, in which comes car.
Yeah.
And then there's another word like gacharanga, which is a space city. And there's a space park going on here, and space beings. And then, which is derived from the chariot car. So something must have been going on in these days. What's going on today, perhaps, in terms of actual space vehicles, cities?
I think what it is that we have gone off into objects rather than into energies moving in realms, in their spheres.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, they talk about the earth space too, and the water space, and the fire space, and the air space too. Did you know that each of the elements is considered to be a realm or a sphere? It is. And if you look at the language further, you'll find that.
Mm-hmm.
It goes beyond space.
Do you suppose there's something quite literally in it too?
You mean, do I believe in UFOs?
Yeah, something.
I'm so crude. I am so crude. Yes.
Yeah.
I do believe in UFOs.
Yeah. Whatever they are.
Unidentified.
Unidentified.
How are we doing? Oh, 9 o'clock.
Usually, our derivation of words, we think we've invented and come down to the mother language.
Yeah, the whole thing of language is such a wonderful mystery. It is. You know, probably 1/3 of our words come from Pali-Sanskrit roots in English.
There's a shaping in
English is very, very influenced by Sanskrit Pali.
How would that be that is it considered a European language, Pali, or
Sanskrit?
Pali, no.
Pali and Sanskrit are basically from the same.
Yeah, one's a variation of the other one, but how would the two languages, let's say English, be influenced by Pali or Sanskrit? Because, I mean, that was from
1/3 of the root words of our words. Their root comes from, like, the word divine,
right,
and the word devil.
Okay.
They both come from the Sanskrit word and the Pali word deva.
Right.
Dewa.
Yeah.
Tibetans pronounce it dewa.
Right.
Which means radiant being, radiance, radiance. So it has become, in English, two different ways of shining. You're either shining black or you're shining white. Shining for the good guys or shining for the bad guys. But they're both radiances. Devil and divine, the same root. And it is a Sanskrit root. And the same with the word donor, donation, donor. Same root.
Okay.
Same root.
I guess it's how, I mean, just...
Where you can follow it. You can follow it.
But how did...
Historically,
yeah.
Where, which line, how did it come across, who traded it,
yeah.
Who brought it. You can actually follow it.
Okay.
And it's 5 minutes after 9 now.
Okay.
And if you think I'm going to get into one of my most beloved ranting and raving things, etymology, at 5 minutes after 9, you're nuts. Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Etymology is one of my favorites. Yes. I love words. So there's a very beautiful light in your heart. Spreads through your whole body, pours out through your pores in all directions. Someone you want to pray for, just imagine them being washed by this gold light that just spreads from this room, moves through the entire universe. Wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, or mind, is just temporarily assuaged, and we think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered. By our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, share with all beings, so there's no suffering. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you.